from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier. Joining me, Rusty Fender.
Hey, good morning, doing, Bill. I'm good to hear from you. Good to talk to you. Unfortunately, we can't see each other still with this pandemic. But again, as we operate from different locations, I'm here in the studio with DC Taylor. Matt Henderson joins us from our Williamsport Bureau. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Rusty. Good morning, guys. Yep, down here we're in the beautiful area of Williamsport, PA here. So glad to join you guys virtually again.
And I guess for the next 6 or 7 days, they say the kind of a heat wave, 93-plus every day, kind of broke. So it was good and refreshing for this weekend coming up as well. It looks pretty cool. DC Taylor, of course, the human glue that keeps this program together for many, many years. He is the CEO, the chief editing officer of the Bold Gold Radio Media Group. How's everything going with you, DC?
All right. Good to be here, guys, and put another show together, another fine show for this weekend here.
But, well, you got to operate on this show first before you put the fine show together. I'll do this one,
then I'll move on to the fine show.
And Bill DeRozier, of course, operating from his bunker at home. Back to you, Bill.
Oh, thank you, Rusty. And I will say I'm glad that the heat is finally broken.
My
parents have decided to leave New York, and they're going to be splitting their time between Pennsylvania and Florida. And so they purchased a house recently down here, and as luck would have it, that means that I have to do all the chores, getting the house ready and set up while they are still in New York.
Are they living close to you, Bill?
They're going to be about 10 minutes away.
No,
you know, close
kidding.
Enough to come over, but far enough away to stay down the road there. But I'm laughing. I feel like I'm a teenager again between cutting the lawn, doing the landscaping, and all these things, getting the house ready for them. So that's been my my project every morning from about like 6 in the morning to about 8 in the morning, and then transitioning back to the normal workload and, of course, the Shale Gas News. But with that being said, this is a show dedicated to the energy industry and helping you understand why energy matters in our lives. A couple of national stories that popped up this week. Oil rises after bigger-than-expected drop in U.S. inventories. Oil prices rose on Wednesday after an industry report showed U.S. crude inventories last week fell more than analysts had expected, bolstering hopes that fuel demand in the world's biggest economy can weather the coronavirus pandemic. API, or the American Petroleum Institute, said on Tuesday that crude stocks fell by 4 million barrels last week versus analyst expectations of a draw of only about 2.9 million barrels. So that's actually a good thing because that means more people are going back to work. Industrial sectors are opening back up. More travel is happening, which will drive that kind of consumption. And if the more consumption grows, that means more investment back into developing the resource and more oil and gas opportunities. Fall in U.S. gas flaring gives cause for optimism. Financial Times reports, this is an opinion piece, global gas flaring hit the highest level in a decade last year, according to a recent World Bank-led report, with a large part of the increase coming from the shale oil fields in the U.S. It would be easy to despair when even developed economies seem unable to grip on the wasteful and polluting practice. But more recent data suggests there may instead be some cause for optimism. And I know for a fact up here in the Marcellus, years ago, I mean, we're talking better part of 8 years now, most of the industry went away from the practice of flaring, instead building out infrastructure that can handle that gas. I know in other places, parts of the country, in parts of the world, there just isn't that infrastructure necessarily in place to move gas to market, and flaring still has to be used to finish up a well and get it into service. Halliburton seeks serious buyer only in real estate auction. Bloomberg reports Halliburton Company has been slashing jobs and retiring fracking gear as low oil prices crushed its order book. Now it's going one step further by selling the land its business rested on. The world's biggest provider of fracking services plans to sell 13 North American sites in October, according to a statement from auctioneer Williams & Williams. Low-cost shale drilling may not boost oil production this time, Bloomberg reports. U.S. shale producers at a crossroads as they find themselves more efficient than ever. They can keep drilling and potentially dent oil prices or use the money to pay down debt. Producers across the Permian are saving about 20% on well costs compared to last year. Chevron's interest in a giant gas field led to $5 billion bid for Noble Energy. Chevron Corp's $5 billion offer to acquire Noble Energy emerged after the U.S. oil major first proposed taking a stake of at least 50% in Noble's Eastern Mediterranean natural gas fields. A proxy filing on Tuesday showed this. If consummated, the all-stock merger would boost Chevron's U.S. shale gas holdings and give it vast natural gas assets off the coast of Israel. Shale giant Occidental Petroleum reports a major loss in quarter two. Occidental Petroleum reported a net loss of $8.4 billion for the second quarter of the year, becoming the latest oil company to suffer the combined effect of low prices and low demand. Unnecessary. North Carolina deals major blow to pipeline project. E&E News reports a $468 million expansion of the Mount Valley pipeline was dealt a major defeat yesterday as the North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality rejected a key water permit, raising questions about the future of a natural gas project the industry considers crucial for the Southeast. The decision marks the latest blow to the pipeline development nationally following the death of the long-embattled Atlantic Coast Natural Gas Project last month in a temporary shutdown order for the Dakota Access Pipeline. International news. Canadian oil expansion hinges on emissions cuts to draw investors, according to the Minister of Energy in Canada. Canada needs it to sharply reduce greenhouse gas emissions from oil and gas production if the country expects to attract investment necessary to expand output, Canadian Natural Resources Manager Seamus O'Regan said on Tuesday. The world's fourth largest global oil producer has been weakened in recent years by a multinational scaling back and investors pulling out due to poor economics and tarnished environmental image. And, of course, the United States growing significantly in its production of natural gas and shale oil has not helped there as well. Australia bucks the global trend, goes with natural gas over renewables, according to Russell. An opinion piece, Australia's conservative government appears to be pivoting away from backing coal for future energy needs, but hasn't quite made it all the way to renewables. Instead, they're looking into natural gas. An advisory board set up by the Prime Minister Scott Morrison to map out strategies for economic recovery from the novel coronavirus pandemic has confirmed it supports various subsidies to boost the natural gas sector. And one more international story. Oil giant Saudi Aramco plans huge 2021 spending cut. E&E News reports Saudi Arabia's state oil company plans to cut its capital expenditure to $25 billion or less next year, about half the amount it was originally planning. According to people familiar with the matter, Saudi Aramco may keep CapEx, most of which is spent on exploration and production, at a similar level until 2023. The people said asking not to be named as a matter that it is not public yet. Houston area company to expand presence in natural gas-rich Marcellus Shale. Houston Chronicle reports that spring-based Southwestern Energy plans to expand its presence in the natural gas field in a deal to buy rival Montage Resources. Financial terms were not disclosed, but the two companies announced that Southwestern will buy Montage using stock instead of cash, and under the deal, Montage stockholders will receive 1.8656 shares of Southwestern stock for each share of Montage stock. It's crazy how these deals come together. Appalachian news. Trump attacks Harris on fracking. Can it swing Pennsylvania and Ohio? E&E News reports that the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee, Joe Biden's vice presidential choice of Senator Kamala Harris, who has vowed to take on the fossil fuel industry to court over climate change and grounded her own run for the presidency on environmental justice, put energy squarely in the center of the presidential election yesterday. Harris, one of the first senators to back the sweeping New Green Deal, quickly found her energy record under assault from President Trump, who criticized the California Democrat from the lectern at the White House. I'm going to throw that one out to Matt and Rusty. What do you guys think of Joe Biden's presidential pick of Kamala Harris and also her agenda, which includes ending fracking.
Well, I'll jump here first, Bill, and touch on that. I think, you know, as we've seen Biden kind of soften his stance on fracking a little bit, that I would assume that conversation was had before then, that he realizes the need for Pennsylvania and Ohio for if he wants to make a run at it. And then I think it, you know, it's an interesting choice, a good choice. I think she obviously was very critical of Biden early on. And I wonder if she's going to soften her stance somewhat on it, you know, realizing, you know, some of their goals and some of their objectives are, you know, pretty far out there. I heard a statistic, and Bill, you might have heard this as well, that, you know, with this Green New Deal or moving completely to renewables, actually, I think this is our friend, Mr. Boulware, did the math and said that in order to come up to just for the commercial or the residential electricity needs to switch completely to renewables or to solar, I think we needed, 4 billion acres of solar fields in the United States. So I think, again, that meant, you know, I think people understand and Biden's understanding and hopefully his, you know, his administration or his campaign will understand that, you know, we need some time, or the country needs some time if we're going to move to renewables. You know, we still depend on them, and we're going to depend on fossil fuels for, you know, the foreseeable future until it becomes economically viable and, you know, sustainable in the long term. So I think it'll be interesting, the debates as these election moves forward, both the presidential level and the vice presidential level. And it'll be interesting to see, has their policies, have they morphed and have they changed somewhat as it regards to fossil fuels?
Totally agree with you, Matt. And again, from what I've seen, just looking at it from a broadcast point of view, brilliant selection. You know, they intercut between between Kamala Harris, you know, insulting and retorting Biden in all the different debates they had, and then all of a sudden they're embracing and, oh, you're the greatest thing since the wheel on stage and all that. And, you know, the black vote comes into play here, and such a brilliant move to get the first, you know, minority, you know, Asian vice president, history making. He could go no other way if he picked a white vice presidential candidate. I think he'd definitely be out on the spot. Very smart by his team to do that. Which way will go, I don't know, but we've all seen those, you know, we've all seen the commercials, and they're running them now more, and they will be running them even more now after his pick until November, about the 600,000 frack workers, oil field workers, roustabouts, and hired hands that'll be out of work should he stop fracking, and that's in his top 10 to do the day after he begins his presidency in January. So, you know, will this backfire on the Biden campaign? I don't know, but personally, just as an editorial comment, just from all the many years that I've seen presidential elections and a lot of TV advertising, you know, over the dam or under the bridge, but I think that Biden, by picking Harris, has done more to help the Trump campaign than to help his own campaign, and that's just my editorial opinion. Bill?
I'm going to jump in there too, Rusty. I think because of how contentious the debates were, early on in the campaign, in the primary phase of the campaign, and then of course her record of being a very aggressive liberal senator, and their efforts to try and now make her look like a moderate, because Biden's always been kind of seen as a moderate, I just don't think it's going to play well. And I'm curious to see how it works here in Pennsylvania, where Biden has tiptoed the line of saying, I'm just going to stop all new hydraulic fracturing and natural gas development on federal-owned lands and offshore. He has not gone as far as saying, I want to stop all hydraulic fracturing. But Harris has made no mistake at all that she wants to end the practice and shut this industry down completely and transition us tomorrow over to green energy. And I think it's a risky gamble, especially in states like Pennsylvania and Ohio and West Virginia, where the energy industry has become a cornerstone industry. So only time will tell. And as you said, Rusty, now the clock kind of starts ticking for November here, and we're really in the full swing I believe the Democratic National Convention, or whatever they're calling it this year, is next week. The Republican one is the week after. So pretty much we're entering the final phase of or the sprint, if you will, to the finish line, and it should get interesting.
You're right. I agree with you, Bill. I'm with you. Everything you said, I see the same way. So this could go either way at this point. But I think he did a lot to help the Trump campaign with the pick. So we'll see.
Certainly will. Well, before we go to Fender's Fast Facts, I know Matt Henderson has some information on an upcoming Think About Energy briefing webinar that you listeners at home might find of interest to join into. Matt, why don't you tell us about the upcoming briefing?
Yeah, thanks, Bill. And as many of our listeners know, we host these Think About briefings. We've adapted, as we all have, and we've gone virtual, and we've done a number of these webinars online now. And we have one coming up here. It's August 26th on the Wednesday. It's another luncheon event from 12 to 1 Eastern time. And we actually have some of our guests that we've had on the show here in the past several months here. So this briefing, what we decided to do is we want to take a look back. You know, sometimes we forget all of the environmental changes, the progress, and really how the industry has helped work closely with DEP to implement some of these changes that were really best management practices. So, yeah, we'll call on this as a decade of environmental and regulatory progress in the natural gas industry. As I mentioned, it's August 26th on a Wednesday, starting at noon Eastern time. And we have joining the discussion, we have Katie Klaber, who's now with the Klaber Group, who, of course, had started the Marcellus Shale Coalition back in the day and helped lead that charge and really was a key member in, from the industry standpoint, helping to spearhead some of these changes. Additionally, we have Joe Reinhart from Babs Calland, and we've highlighted and talked about their annual report on the state of the oil and gas industry. And also we have Pat Henderson, who is now with the Marcellus Shale Coalition, of course, as part of the Corbett administration during some of the major regulatory changes from DEP standpoint there. So the three of them will be joining the discussion. Of course, George Stark, moderator extraordinaire, director of external affairs for Cabot Oil and Gas Corp, will be moderating the discussion and taking questions from our audience. So if you're interested, you can go to thinkaboutbriefing.com. We have more information on there, as well as a place to register. Again, it's registered to get a free event due to our sponsors. And we look forward to everybody joining, submitting questions. And we always have a great dialogue on this. So appreciate the plug there, Bill, and we hope to see everybody on the 26th online.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to it. And, of course, we will bring excerpts and interviews from that event on the following week to the Shale Gas News program if you're not able to tune into it live. Why don't we now transition to Fender's Fast Facts. Rusty, what do you have for us?
Thank you, Bill. And 51 years ago this weekend, you folks are not around for this, and I was 12, but Woodstock, 51 years of peace, love, and mud, it seems. August 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, 400,000 spectators in Bethel, New York. The acts, 35 acts ranging from the Grateful Dead to The Who to Jimi Hendrix. Woodstock was banned from the original site, which was supposed to be in Wallkill, New York, because of the lack of toilets. So they moved it to Bethel, not too far away. Wallkill, the Howard Mills Industrial Park in Wallkill, 3 miles from Middletown, New York, not far from here, right off of 17M. So they moved it to Max Yasker's farm. Bethel, New York had just 2,366 residents, and Max Yasker owned a 600-acre dairy farm, and of course in Bethel. They allowed the organizers to use his property for a fee of $50,000 in cash. So he did make some money on that deal. There were many cows in attendance at Woodstock. It's true. The Yasker's farm was a functioning dairy farm. They provided all the milk and cream to Breakstones, who still to this day, although it's owned by Kraft, makes Breakstones cottage cheese, sour cream, yogurts. So his workers tried to corral their 1,400 cows in a fenced area, but there were so many people that ran over the barrier and set up campgrounds, they just decided to let the cows wander and mingle with the folks. Jimi Hendrix was the most paid, the highest paid performer, $18,000. He got $18,000 for 8 minutes of performance, he closed out the show, that would be $162,000 in today's dollars. So Jimi Hendrix, $18,000. Creedence Clearwater Revival received $10,000. The Who, $6,250. And Joe Cocker got $1,300 for performing at Woodstock. And of course, we all heard that Woodstock's musical acts needed to be helicoptered in because folks on 17M, Route 17 Middletown, just parked their cars in both lanes in the shoulders, and there was a 35-mile traffic jam back in the summer of 1969. Richie Havens went on first because Sweetwater, the opening act, could not get there. And although they did sell tickets, it became a free concert, but they had a lot of tickets. In fact, those ticket stubs they see go for hundreds of dollars on eBay. There were tickets sold. How much was admission per day to Woodstock? You got a deal if you took all 4 days. But most folks just bought it by the day because it was a 14-hour event, and nobody thought that they would stay there and sleep there and bathe there for 4 days. So it was mainly sold by the day. How much per day one ticket, Bill?
Ah, geez.
1969.
Trying to account for inflation
exactly,
and all that. I'm
exactly.
going to go with $5 a ticket.
Matthew?
Well, I was going to say $20 for the whole event, and I'm not going to do the inflation. That was $69 money.
Yes.
So about $20.
DC?
I'll go with $1.
I'll tell you, Bill and Matt were extremely close. $7 a day. Matt, you were right on. For a four-day deal, you got $18 plus tax. So $7 a day, $18, and now a ticket for 51 years later goes for about $700 on eBay. And, of course, it was originally called the Woodstock Music and Art Fair was the real name. 51 years ago this weekend, the Woodstock Music and Art Fair. And those are the fun facts this week, Bill.
Rusty, thank you as always. We're going to take a quick break here on the Shale Gas News. Stay tuned for more after a word from our sponsors.
Did you know there's a shortage of truck drivers in Pennsylvania and all across the U.S.? If you've been thinking about a driving career, now is the perfect time to get in at the brand new Class A CDL training program at the Susquehanna County Career and Technology Center. The next round of night classes starts August 31st. Call the center for more info, 570-278-9229. 278-9229.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental, health, vision, everything is top notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan, we have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt, you could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too because it is before taxes. So.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule. The 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat eating needs.
Whole pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Nice. Cabot Oil and Gas partners with the Weinberg Food Bank to battle food insecurity in Northeast PA.
It's the partnership of foundations and the companies like Cabot that really enable us to be successful.
Gene Brady, president of the Weinberg Food Bank.
We are very blessed. Those regions that have the presence of the gas industry in this area really enables us with things like Fill Glass with Hope, Hunter Share the Harvest, other donations that traditionally have been made to help food banks in their mission to end hunger in Pennsylvania.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News. It is now time for another Shale Directory's Meet a Member podcast. Joining us today from Inland Tarpon Liner, Matt Purcell, who is the sales and procurement manager And he's actually calling us in from, well, I guess the West Coast, or as close to the West Coast, Utah. We welcome you to the program today, Matt. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about Inland Tarpon Liner and what you guys have been doing for what I have read on your website over 30 years.
Yeah, actually, this year is year number 40. So we're pretty excited that the business started with really, really small roots and grew into something that's been around for 40 years and has been a staple in the oil and gas community for the flourishing of all the shale development, whether that was in the Bakken or now what we see so strong in the Appalachian Basin there. And we're very appreciative of the opportunity to grow in a country like the United States.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, you could hopefully speak to this. I mean, you guys said this is your 40th year, which again, congratulations. And it's great to see a company, you know, diversifying to get into the oil and gas industry. And I'm sure, you know, you still have a lot in the ag area, and I see you do some in the athletic arena as well. But maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, from an environmental standpoint. You mentioned you work with, you know, chemical companies, and you know, that environmental focus is where the company got started. But maybe talk a little bit, you know, why are the liners and why is this a good solution or the best solution maybe at this point, you know, for protecting the environment? You know, because as you know, you're in it enough to know that, you know, the environmental concerns are out there, and there's a lot of people concerned when you mobilize a drilling site and you do the completions, and, you know, there's a lot of moving parts out there, but your liners is protecting the environment. And maybe if you could just talk a little bit about that and what you guys have seen and what you've learned over the, you know, not just oil play, but, you know, your company's history.
Yeah. You know, there are so many different challenges depending on the location, depending on, you know, the environment that you're going into, and they're unique. And what each environmental regulatory body is requesting is unique. So what is done in the Marcellus Utica or in the Appalachian Basin is so different from what is done in the Permian, which is so different from what's done in the Bakken, and frankly so different from what's done in the Middle East, as we have quite a few customers over there as well. And each of them have a unique challenge. So as we go into that, we're looking, there's not one material that fits all applications. There's not one material that's the right thing to do for each challenge. You have to address each of them individually. So as we've gone into that, that's where our flexibility and our custom approach has been paramount to our success, because we've been able to look at it and say, you know what, in this application, we are not going to have any traction on site, or there's no vehicles are going to be touching this. This is a pond, or this is a above ground storage tank. This is the right material for that solution. And we're able to build something custom to that need, custom to the chemicals that are involved. It's been, you know, from our end, very exciting to see the changes in the industry as people become, you know, as those concerns, some are validated and some are invalidated. And as you go through those environmental concerns and say, here's the right way to address it. So for example, you know, as you're talking, you know, coming up to do a, to bring a rig on site in, let's say Pennsylvania, on those sites, you've got to completely contain the entire site. So once they've gone in and done that dirt work, flattened the site out, prepared the subgrade, to bring a drilling rig on site, they can't just do that in Pennsylvania. In Pennsylvania, you've got to go down and put down a material that is going to protect the entire site. So when you drive your pickup on site, it still has to be contained. You still have to have high-grade materials underneath your vehicle to make sure a drop of oil from your engine doesn't touch the soil. And everything from that to, of course, the frac fluids and the other chemicals and things that are on site. So extremely sensitive, extremely cautious with the environment, and so that requires different materials. From our standpoint, that's the fun of looking at the challenge and saying, how do we address this? How do we address the specific need of this site, of this, you know, this producer, and how they drill, how they frack, how they deal with this? How do we come on site with the right solution for them? So we have materials that vary widely. We have things that are very lightweight, that are materials that are very lightweight, yet have extremely high puncture resistance. So you can drive on location, you can drive on that material and not tear it apart. One of my favorite stories of a material we developed, and I think we brought it to market about 5 years ago now, that we call the 60 XGL, 60 mil thick, and multi-scrim, multi-layered material. And we brought it to market, and our first pad that we laid out, we put it out. They brought the, some different office units on, and they trenched one side of the site, and they backfilled, and the material was all laid out perfect and pristine. And they had the material over a berm, and then they backfilled over the material on the back end of the site so it would all be pinned down. And they brought a coil rig on site, and they turned it 90 degrees on top of the material, which just puts incredible forces directly down into that liner where you're turning those wheels at 90 degrees with that much weight from something like a coil rig. And we get this very upset complaint that they were very irritated with us because the material didn't tear. Instead, it pulled all the way out of the berm, and it drug all the housing units and the trucks and everything that was sitting on the pad 6 feet across the site before they realized there was a challenge. So they would have preferred the rip so that they could just patch it. But for us, it was just a great testament of this is a good solution for what they're doing, because they're putting incredible stress and strain on this material, and it's taking care of business. It's containing any challenge, any environmental risk.
Well, Matt, it seems like, again, the work you guys are doing in providing these covers, these liners, these tarps are so important, not only for the oil and gas industry, but so many other industries. Again, just looking through your website and just talking with you here today, everything from agriculture to oil and gas to, of course, even athletic fields. And I've learned quite a bit from you today and also on your website. We're going to be wrapping up here. Where can people go to learn more about what you do? And if they're interested in contacting you, how can they get in touch with you?
Absolutely. The easiest path, of course, is going to a website. So inlandtarp.com, inlandtarp.com. And then, of course, if you want to pick up the phone and call, our 800 number is 1-888-377-5640. Feel free to reach out. We're happy to help and provide solutions that are specific to your needs.
Great, Matt. I want to thank you for joining us here on the Shell Directory's Meet a Member podcast, part of the Shell Gas News. We look forward to hearing more from you in the future. Good luck to your company, and we'll have you back on again real soon.
Sounds great. Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break here on the Shell Gas News. Stay tuned for more after a word from our sponsors.
About 10 billion tons, or over 70% of our nation's freight, moves via U.S. highways every year. With about 3.5 million truck drivers currently employed, that means there's a driver shortage. Get in on the new Class A CDL training program at the Susquehanna County Career and Technology Center. Get top-notch training in their state-of-the-art CDL truck driving simulator. The next round of night classes starts August 31st. Call the center for more info, 570-278-9229.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems and Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
If you're in construction or the gas industry, your team's getting it done 24 hours a day, and so is BX3. When you're working, so is BX3. They're your prime connection to parts, tools, and equipment rentals. If they don't have it at their Montrose or Tunkhannock locations, they'll find it for you, somehow, some way. Trust me, they know people who know people. They're the relentless problem solvers. Call BX3 in Tunkhannock, 836-3000. In Montrose, it's 278-7368. Again, Tunkhannock, 836-3000. Montrose, 278-7368.
We've now been partnering for a couple of years with Cabot to provide what we call Fill a Glass with Hope. In this past year, we served hundreds of kids, and we provided nutritious milk in a quantity of 6,462 half gallons. We're grateful, as are the hundreds of children that are receiving the benefits of the program as a result of what Cabot and its partners do.
For more information, go to wellsaidcabot.com.
Welcome to the Energy Update, presented by the Institute for Energy Research for the week of August 10th, 2020. I'm Alex Stevens, and I'm joined this week by IER's Deputy Director of Public Policy, Jordan McGillis. Jordan, how's it going?
It's going well, Alex. How are you?
Great. What do we have going on the blog this week here at IER?
Well, given that it is an election year at the presidential level, we can be assured that there will not be a shortage of opportunities for us to comment on big plans. And one of those big plans is the Biden so-called clean energy plan. This is a $2 trillion plan, allegedly, that would attempt to completely remake our energy sector and specifically our electricity sector, eliminating its carbon dioxide emissions by the year 2035. We've got an article up at IER that breaks this down and explains why it is a very misbegotten plan. It is a costly plan, and it is an unrealistic plan. Now, relatedly, there's a report out from a couple of San Francisco-based energy researchers this week that is essentially on the same idea: eliminating carbon dioxide from our energy sector by 2035. And this report is titled Mobilizing for a Zero Carbon America. Essentially, one can read this report as being an endorsement and an explication of the Biden plan. And what our work this week does is looks at why these approaches are utterly worrisome and potentially disastrous. Now, the biggest thing for listeners and for the average American to understand is where our electricity grid is now in terms of its sources of energy, and then where our total energy source kind of data slate puts us. And based on Energy Information Administration data, U.S. primary energy consumption by energy source does not bode well for a zero carbon by 2035 plan. And the reason is that renewable energy, this is including wind, solar, but also things like biofuels, things like hydroelectric, that only makes up 11% of our energy on a BTU basis at this point. It's really quite minuscule. Wind, which is kind of the darling of the clean energy movement, now makes up about 8.5% of electricity generation. When you look at this, though, on total energy consumption, it's just about 2.5%, because, of course, much of our transportation comes directly from oil, from gasoline and diesel, things like that. So in order for these sources of energy, wind and solar in particular, to make up even close to half of the U.S. Energy makeup in 2035, it would require enormous new buildouts, not only of production, but also of transmission electricity from these production sites. So this is an enormous undertaking that would cause ridiculous and unneeded trouble for our grid and for our wider energy sector.
Yeah, and of course, the thing that's always overlooked, and it's something that we've touched on in the past on this show, is just that the opportunity cost of all that spending, and that the plan would divert land, labor, and capital away from other projects in the economy to produce basically more expensive and less reliable energy. And, you know, just something that's worth pointing out is that we've seen countries who have embarked on experiments like this. In Germany, since 2010, they've been undergoing an energy transition, not completely along the same lines as the Biden plan, because I think Biden's plan leaves room for nuclear energy, but they still have set targets to go completely carbon emission free energy by 2050. And what we know about that plan is that it's resulted in the highest energy prices in Europe, and that they've steadily seen electricity prices go up the entire time that they've been pursuing those.
Yeah, I'd like to build on your brief mention of the opportunity cost. You mentioned three different ways in which we can look at that: land, labor, and capital. And on each of those fronts, shifting to more wind and more solar is a big loss. In terms of land, the requirements for producing solar and wind far outstrip something like a coal generating facility or a natural gas power plant. These are very dense energy sources, coal and natural gas, and they're able to create a lot of power with not a big footprint. It's the total opposite for wind and solar. I believe I saw a report which indicated that in order for us to get all of our energy from wind and solar, it would require something like 70% of the U.S. land mass to be covered with some combination of solar panels and wind turbines. That is obviously a future that nobody wants, but it's something that the average person hasn't really given much consideration. Partly that's because these facilities typically are out away from population centers, but that just compounds the problem because building wind and solar requires all the new transmission. So you've got that enormous land aspect, and then the labor aspect. You're getting less on a BTU basis per worker. It's simply not very efficient way of generating our energy. We sort of have a fetish in this country about job creation and maintaining energy jobs, but ideally we'd be getting a lot of energy from each person employed in that field. We'd be getting a lot of output, and we get a lot more output from workers in the hydrocarbon field than we do from the installation of solar panels and things like that. And then capital, it's the same story. You're getting a lot more bang for your buck when you've got a dense source of energy that doesn't require a lot of labor relative to the alternative.
And something related to the labor aspect of that too is that like anything else, renewable energy requires maintenance and upkeep. And as the production of energy is spread out all over the place, the labor that needs to go into maintaining wind turbines and solar panels and keeping them operable is just not comparable to, for example, a natural gas power plant where everything's kind of in one place. You can see how down the line there's going to be rising costs in capital upkeep.
Yep. Doesn't matter how you look at this, it would be an enormous diversion of our resources in terms of money, in terms of people, in terms of land demands from something that's working very well for us, which is natural gas electricity generation, to something that just hasn't proven that it can compete in an open market.
Well, it's something we'll keep an eye on, more reports on what each of the candidates are proposing in terms of energy policy. And these two articles, along with more work from IER staff, can be found at our website, instituteforenergyresearch.org. Thank you for listening. Until next week, I'm Alex Stevens.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Linde Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindeco.com. Linde installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindeco.com.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
Cabot has been, you know, a fantastic corporate partner because they caught the vision. We have a goal to end hunger in Northeast Pennsylvania by 2025. Cabot's contribution is helping make that happen.
I live in Springville. I'm a landowner in Auburn Township. They've treated me with respect, my property with respect. They do an excellent job. Everything has been neat. There's never been anything out of place. Anything that they said they were going to do, they did. They came to you and told you what they were going to do. They gave you a timetable. They followed that timetable. Do not be afraid to invest with these people.
Industries like Cabot not only helped and lent their support to the Dietrich Theater, but they reached out and asked how they could help in other ways. Cabot has shown us that they want to invest in our community, that they're here to stay, and they want to support us for the long run.
For more information, go to wellsaidcabot.com.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson. I'm DC Taylor. It is time for the top five, and then we'll get to the job segment coming up in just a couple of minutes. It's the top five stories off of MarcellusDrilling.com. Jim Willis sends us the stories every week. We appreciate that, Bill. Jim, that is. And so let's get to right to the five stories here. Number five, stop the presses. Southwestern Energy buying Montage Resources for $857 million. We didn't see this one coming. Just yesterday, MDN brought you the second quarter update from Montage Resources. Little did we know the company was in an advanced stage of negotiations to sell itself to Southwestern Energy. Perhaps sell isn't quite the right word. The two companies are merging, with Southwestern taking over Montage. In an all-stock deal worth roughly $857 million, the combination will create the third largest, by acres leased, Marcellus Utica driller with a combined 786,187 net acres. Montage Resources itself is the result of a merger between Eclipse Resources with Blue Ridge Mountain Resources, which happened more than a year ago. Southwestern issued the following press release earlier this morning. Southwestern Energy Company, SWN on the New York Stock Exchange, and Montage Resource Corporation, MR, on the New York Stock Exchange, today announced that they have entered into a definitive merger agreement under which Southwestern Energy will acquire Montage Resources in an all-stock transaction. Based on the three-day average closing share prices of the companies as of August 11th and under the terms of the agreement, Montage Resources shareholders will receive 1.8656 shares of Southwestern for each Montage Resources share. The transaction is expected to close in the fourth quarter of 2020, subject to customary closing conditions, including the approval of the Montage Resources shareholders. Rusty?
Thanks, D. Not guilty pleas in First Energy nuke bailout bribery scandal. First Energy Solutions, now called Energy Harbor, allegedly paid $60 million in bribes to now former Ohio House Speaker Larry Householder and four of his associates to gain their assistance in passing the hugely unpopular House Bill No. 6. See First Energy involved in bribery scheme to pass $1 billion nuke bailout law. HB 6, which became law, gives Energy Harbor $1.1 billion in ratepayer funds to prop up the company's under-economic nuclear power plants. disadvantaging other energy sources like gas-fired power plants. Now, four of the five defendants have just entered pleas, all of them not guilty. Fortunately, everyone and his brother and sister in Columbus, including Rhino Governor Mike DeWine, are now working on a bill to repeal the unpopular House Bill 6. See Ohio Governor DeWine reverses course. He was granted an extension because he's getting a new lawyer. Just coming to light now is a recorded conversation from last September in which one of the defendants described the relationship between Mr. Householder and First Energy as, quote, this unholy alliance, end quote. Indeed, be sure your sins and corruption will find you out. That's from the Bible. Matthew?
Okay, number three, NFG, more PA fracked gas to New York coming online the next few months. Last week, National Fuel Gas Company, the parent company of the Marcellus Utica driller Seneca Resources and midstream company Empire Pipeline, issued its third quarter, everyone else's second quarter, financial and operational update. Among the things we learned, Seneca dropped to using a single drilling rig in June and shut in some of its Marcellus Utica production. The strategy remains in place for the foreseeable future, according to NFG's top brass. The big news from this update for us was a reference by National Fuel Gas CEO David Baer that the Empire North Pipeline project is expected to come online in the next few months. Empire North beefs up flows of fracked natural gas along the Empire Pipeline by an extra 205 million cubic feet per day from Pennsylvania into New York State. The project involves building two new compressor stations, one in Tioga County, PA, and the other in Ontario County, New York, which began more than a year ago. Sounds like these two stations are nearly done and ready to go online. Rusty?
Thanks, Matt. Work continues on country's biggest natural gas power plant in Ohio. This is number two. From time to time, we check in on the Guernsey Power Station, a mammoth 1,875-megawatt Utica gas-fired electric generating station being built in southern Guernsey County, Ohio. As near as we can tell, it's the biggest natural gas-fired plant anywhere, period. We spotted a story that says work at the site is progressing. Work on a huge tech power generating facility that will have a huge positive impact on the nation's power grid just off State Route 821 near Byesville, continues to progress. The Guernsey Power Station is a proposed 1,875-megawatt natural gas-fired energy generation facility that will produce electricity equivalent to the power needs of approximately 1 million homes. Using state-of-the-art combined cycle technology and a dry air cooling system, the plant will be a cost-efficient, fuel-efficient plant that protects air quality and conserves water. The facility has direct access to an abundant, stable supply of clean-burning natural gas from the Utica and Marcellus shale plays. The plant also has direct access to existing overhead electrical transmission lines. Once completed, the Guernsey Power Station will be the largest single-phase power generating station in America. The cost of preparing the site, including grouting, elevating, and grading, was approximately $25 million. Construction on the facility is ongoing. The beginning of operation is planned for the fall of 2022. Once online, the Guernsey Power Station will provide the power to the PJM interconnection market. PJM is a regional transmission organization that coordinates the movement of wholesale electricity in all parts of Delaware, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and the District of Columbia. According to Curtis Wilkerson, a spokesman for the project, the Guernsey Power Station project is proud to work closely with our partners, suppliers, and contractors on construction of the important project. Presently, about 92% of the approximate 335 workers on site are union craft labor from the area working in conjunction with local companies and experts in the field of power plant construction. The local community will benefit from hundreds of jobs at peak construction and approximately 25 to 30 permanent high-tech jobs, all while providing substantial financial support to the Rolling Hills School District. Big story, Dee.
All right, here's one more story here for you from MarcellusDrilling.com. Collusion exposed between Russia and U.S. Congress pertaining to gas pipe. The false narrative that that somehow Donald Trump and or those in his administration colluded with Russia to affect the 2016 election is flat out 100% horse manure. It has been proven to be completely false, a narrative concocted by former FBI Director James Comey and others tied to the Hillary Clinton campaign. Yet to this day, the so-called news outlets like the New York Times, Washington Post, and the joke of a network, CNN, still push that false narrative. They lie. They don't reveal the real Russian collusion story. Russia is spending big money lobbying and trying to influence something, but it's not Donald Trump and his re-election campaign. Russia is spending money on members of Congress attempting to bribe them, or called lobbying, to ease off on sanctions and other measures meant to block the Nord Stream 2 natural gas pipeline from Russia to Germany. When all the facts are finally revealed, we wonder which members of Congress will get caught with their hands in the Russian cookie jar, which members of Congress are colluding with Russia to affect a favorable outcome for legislation aimed at Nord Stream 2. We think Shell and Engie should be sanctioned. Make them pay and force them to divest of their U.S. assets unless they quit funding this attack on our security, which is what this is. The Nord Stream 2 pipeline from Russia to Germany, locking in Germany and other European countries, putting them under the thumb of Vladimir Putin, is a direct attack on America's security because we're responsible for protecting Europe from Russia. Who will Germany call when threatened by Russia? The USA. That's who. We need to smoke out who is getting lobbied, in other words, receiving money from Russia, in our own Congress. Let's expose the corruption and eject those members of Congress ASAP. We bring you this story because when Nord Stream 2 starts up, less American LNG, Marcellus Utica molecules, will get exported to Germany and other European countries. So yeah, we as a region have a vested interest in the outcome of this issue. You can find all those stories and much more on MarcellusDrilling.com. Jim Willis compiles lots of great stories over there, and we thank him for sending us the top five every week. If you want to subscribe, go ahead and just go tap into your web browser, MarcellusDrilling.com/email. All right, well, it's time for the job segment now, brought to you by Lackawanna College and the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty.
And thanks, Dee. In Pennsylvania now, Flowserve, the Valve folks, looking for a project engineer based in Moosic. Comanche Gas Solutions, a field technician out of Smithfield. JW Energy Company, looking for a compression service technician headquartered in Towanda, the Northern Tier. WC Welding, a compressor operator out of Montrose. ROC Service Companies, looking for an experienced roustabout. It's out of Williamsport. Shale Pro Energy Services, a measurement technician based in Houston. TC Energy, a project portfolio analyst out of Washington, Pennsylvania. American Petroleum, a state communication lead that's out of Harrisburg. And Kinder Morgan, a mechanic specialist out of Marionville. In Ohio, Summit Midstream Partners looking for a field operator based in Jacobsburg. Diversified Gas and Oil, a SCADA analyst that's out of Canton. TC Energy, an E&I controls or measurement technician headquartered in Hamilton. Husky Energy, an instrumentation engineer headquartered in Lima. Billfinger, looking for a project director headquartered in Canton. Select Energy Services, a frac automation technician out of Cambridge. And KLX Energy Services, a testing assistant for Flowback Division. It's out of New Philadelphia. Moving to West Virginia, Bedell Gas Compression folks looking for a field service mechanic out of Weirton. RDR Energy Services, an electrician foreman. It's out of Clarksburg. Northeast Natural Energy, an administrative technician headquartered in Morgantown. TC Energy has an opening for an administrative analyst out of Charleston. Kleinfelder, an environmental inspection professional. It's out of Bridgeport. And ConServe, looking for a well-plugging and abandonment cementing operator. That's for well containment out of Spencer. In New York State, Dandelion Energy, there's a new one, a drilling field coordinator out of Peekskill. Kleinfelder again, a resident project manager for the natural gas division out of Fishkill. GE Gas Power, a technical EID that's out of Schenectady. Buckeye Partners, an apprentice terminal operator based in Newburgh, and GE Renewable Energy, looking for a senior product manager headquartered in Rochester. And those are the jobs this week, as DC mentioned, sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. And we thank you for listening every week on our chain of stations, Gem 104 and WEJS 1600 AM and 104.1 FM in Williamsport. And we'll see you back here same time next week, same time, same stations, for the Shale Gas News. For Bill DeRosia, Matt Henderson, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Thanks for listening to the Shale Gas News.